the Amazon Echo brings voice control to your home. Play music, ask questions, check the news, weather and more. All you have to do is ask.
Alexa, what's in the diary for today?
Today at 6 p.m, Buster is back from the vet.
Alexa, add tennis balls and dog biscuits to my shopping list.
I've added tennis balls and dog biscuits to your shopping list.
Alexa, play my Buster playlist. Just
the
two of us.
The Amazon Echo. Just ask.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Doing good, Russell. How are you, sir?
Real good. And we've got Mike on the line as well. Mike, how's it going tonight?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm doing fine.
Well, you're doing good? All right. While we're waiting for our guest, we might as well hit up an early subject. I'll hit you with this, and I wrote on 4 Philly Sports the other day that I noticed the difference in Claude Giroux and helping the Flyers in the sense that I think someone told him just be a little more selfish and, you know, don't try and make that perfect pass. And maybe once in a while, take a great shot. And he's starting to do that, and he's scoring more. I don't think it's because he got engaged. What are your thoughts?
Well, you never know. He might add a little pep to his step. But, that's been a common theme over the years, I think, with Claude, is the fact that Flyers – he's wired obviously as a distributor. He loves making plays, but we've seen plenty of examples where his shot is really he can really be quite a weapon. We've seen it more on the power play than we've seen it at 5-on-5. But you want to sort of start to see a little more of that aggressive nature with firing the puck more at 5-on-5. And again, you know, he obviously is able to pile up points at will when he wants to. But again, it's, I have to sometimes wonder a little bit too, if you watch a guy like Sidney Crosby as well, who's obviously sniping the living daylights out of the puck in Pittsburgh, whether or not he sort of looks across the state and goes, hey, you know, if Sidney, who's known as a distributor, can rifle it, then so can I. So
that's a great point.
Again, something that's needed.
All right. Well, you know what? We'll pick up the Flyers talk in a little bit. Right now we're going to welcome on Joe Yurden from NHL.com and also Buffalo Sabres beat reporter and all-around good guy, although he's a Yankees fan, but we won't really hold that against him. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing good, guys. Good to talk to you.
Same here. So let's get right into it. So the return of Jack Eichel, it's interesting because last year I felt like he was, you know, an important guy to the team, but he, you know, he certainly wasn't the team. And now this year he has literally turned into the team. It seems like it's a totally different complexion with him out there. It seems like even Evander Kane seems happier when he's out there, probably because he doesn't have to work as hard. It just – everything seems to change with him out there. Dan Bylsma's got a little more groove in his step now. It's an amazing thing because of a kid that age – you usually don't see teams other than maybe with like a Sidney Crosby sort of latching on to a guy like that, but they really made a difference against the Rangers. They saw that one opportunity that Adam Clendenning gave them, and they just stepped on the Rangers' throat. I got to give them credit.
Yeah, it was a slow burn for him against the Rangers, I think. I think that first period was pretty sloppy for him. I think it was pretty sloppy all around.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think that might have been Henrik's worst game of the season, perhaps.
Yeah.
I think that you could chalk that up as just a real stinker for him. But I think, you know, Sabres against a team like the Rangers, I mean, that's, you know, they're the underdog by definition. But I think, you know, Jack's line just got better as the game went along. I think the second period they were great. And the third period they really had the Rangers D back on their heels. And, you know, it was the pressure of, you know, it's Jack doing his thing, but it's also Evander using his speed to his advantage, and, you know, Sam just being a smart player out there and taking advantage of some things. And, you know, when you've got that line clicking, that's really tough because you got to worry about them, but Then you got Oposo and O'Reilly doing their thing, and, you know, they went from having Carey to Molson on that left side. But, you know, that line's dangerous every time they're out there because they're so savvy and they're so good at what they do. So, you know, you're going to get worked pretty hard by them. And probably, you know, they're probably going to get a couple of chances, you know, every time they've got a shift out there. So, but you're right, you know, with what Jack's done already here in two games, I mean, it's like he's the key to unlocking everybody else by just bringing balance to all of these lines instead of it just being, you know, the O'Reilly line and then, you know, three lines where, you know, maybe they'll luck their way into a goal. Instead, you really have to focus on two lines that are dangerous. And, you know, that takes away some of the minutes from that, you know, the Foligno, Gianna, Larson line where they can do some good work too and keeps that fourth line off the ice, which, I mean, you know, it's three guys that are trying to either figure things out at the NHL level or just trying to figure things out in general.
Joe, after last year, after a really injury-plagued season, Robin Lehner, you know, got in shape. You know, there's a lot of talk during the summer about him doing MMA training. But he comes into the season now 5-7-3, losing record. Hasn't played badly, but it seems that the team has played better in front of Anders Nilsson, and Anders Nilsson has played pretty well so far as the backup. Is Leonard the number one, or is this goaltending situation still in flux?
No, Leonard's the number one guy. I think, you know, you saw, you know, I mean, it's not taking anything away from Nilsson. He's played well when he's played, and that's what you want out of your backup goalie. And, you know, maybe you need a guy like that to kind of kick Robin in the rear end sometimes and say, hey, listen, you know, get it together here, bud. But, you know, I think Leonard's fine. You know, the record's tough, but he's had a lot of those games where, you know, the Sabres are scoring one or two and, you know, he's just kind of left on the hook. And, you know, that's tough. And, I, you know, for a while there, he was rocking a 925 save percentage, which if you've got that as a goalie, you're doing pretty well. And, you know, that's, you know, it's come down a little bit since then. But, I mean, I think with the way things work out, I think in general, he's a guy that's going to put up a 920 over the length of a whole season. So I'm not sweating Robin yet, but, you know, it's nice to have your backup provide, you know, some security. When he's playing, and because you don't want it to be a situation where Robin's playing, you know, 9 out of every 10 games, and, you know, you're kind of stuck, you know, worrying about if he's going to wear out. I think that's a good thing to have Nilsson playing this well.
No, it is a good thing. So let me ask you something off topic. You know, we're starting to see some of the preliminary lists coming out for the World Juniors, and of course they're all preliminary, and you may not have heard anything, but I'm curious, was there any Cliff backlash from the area? Because I'm really up in the air about the guy. Like, I see what he does. He gets points. He's on a great team. But clearly Team Canada didn't see enough in him to have him on that great roster. So I'm curious if there was any backlash in the Buffalo area.
You know what? I think everybody's been so obsessed here lately with Jack and getting Jack back that nobody's paid any attention to the World Junior stuff. I think if there's anybody that's going to be in the mix, you know, Saber-wise, that you know, guys that would be in the mix for the World Juniors, you know, guys like Nylander, or maybe, you know, I don't know if Gooley is too old at this point, but he's close. I mean, it's like 19,
no, actually, no, he's
almost
close.
20.
You know, I think he can do it, but I think he just didn't make it. But I will tell you, we had Kevin Devine on today for our Sirius show that'll air tomorrow, and we talked Gooley, and he's really high on Gooley. And actually, he even dropped that, you know, Tim Murray had done some scouting. And so that was kind of interesting because, you know, you don't hear a lot of GMs doing a lot of scouting.
Yeah.
But Murray does do some and actually has pushed for some players. So I found, you know, I think those kinds of things are going to help the Sabres, although we do hear now that he's searching the KHL frantically for players. And I'm kind of wondering, maybe he'd be better off in Finland or Sweden. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, obviously he was scouting Gooley because, you know, they're in a bit of a bind now with the defense. And, you know, now with, you know, George's, you know, maybe he's got a foot injury here where it's going to keep him out for a while. We'll find out tomorrow morning. But, you know, I mean, they pulled him out of pulled him out of Prince George on an emergency basis. I mean, that kind of stuff doesn't really happen with guys out of junior. So, you know, I got a funny feeling we're going to see Brendan Gooley play his first NHL game tomorrow afternoon against the Bruins. But, you know, it's yeah, I know.
Good offensive talent. He really is. And Devine couldn't say enough good things about him, and we certainly like him. It'd be interesting. I mean, it'd be interesting also if he starts having an impact at the NHL level and he's not on Team Canada's roster. That could change,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they're in this bind now with the injuries. I mean,
yeah.
Kulikov will be back soonish, I'd say, within a couple of weeks. He's already skating, so it's just a matter of getting him skating with the team. You know, then you get Bogosian back, and then, you know, if Georges has, you know, he took a shot off the foot, so now you're worried if, you know, if he's got a broken foot, then he's out for a while. And,
yeah,
you know, you're looking at, you know, being at, without three of your six defensemen, and you've already got your top AHL pair as your third pairing. So, you know, if it's a thing where Brendan Gooley's got to stick around all season, I know with the emergency recall, there's, you know, a lot of stipulations with junior kids, but something where he's got to stick around, and they just have to suck it up and eat that, you know, burn that first year of the contract. I mean, I guess there's worse things that could happen, but it says a lot for where the depth is at with defensemen on this crew. I mean, we knew it was pretty rough as it was anyhow, that, you know, a lot of these guys have already graduated and moved up. You know, once McCabe came up, it was like, all right, Gooley's the next guy, but when is he coming? And then, you know, it's, you're kind of waiting around, waiting for things to happen. But, you know, this whole situation, though, I mean, you know, Murray's getting pretty desperate for defensive help. I mean, he's always looking for defensive help. That's his big thing. But this is getting
a
little dicey right now.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing either, by the way, if they burn his first year of the ELC, because the organization's so high in him, it's not like they're worried about losing him anyhow. They'll just have to sign him sooner. It's no big deal. If he does what they think he's going to do, he's getting a long-term deal anyhow.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to figure out the best way to kind of stagger some of these second contracts out, because, you know, you're already worried about Sam and Jack 2 years down the road, or, you know, a year down there after next season. I think it is. Yeah, after next season, they got to worry about getting those guys done. They just got Ristolainen taken care of. So, you know, these are, you know, maybe you got to worry about, you know, giving Robin Lehner a big deal after the season. I mean, there's a lot of money issues here coming up. So, but I think with Gooley, they just wanted to try to buy themselves a couple more years before bringing him up, so that at least that contract slides, you know, for another year. But I mean, if they got to eat one now, that kind of throws a wrench in things. But you know what? He's the last big prospect defenseman they've got, in the pipeline ready to come. I mean, unless you're talking Will Borgen, that's St. Cloud and those guys. But, you know, I think Gooley's the number one guy with a bullet.
And there was some thought last year, Joe, that Gooley was going to make the team as an 18-year-old until Dion Phaneuf put his lights out in that preseason game.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm a little surprised. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say the one curious thing was that, you know, they got a little peek at, you know, Gooley, and he kind of stuck around again, but then they sent him right back to junior. You have that ability to keep a guy around for a little while and then decide what you want to do. I mean, you're not hurting his development by keeping him around at all. I mean, keeping him around pros it's fine, but, you know, I think they were in a spot where they were so tied up against the cap, they couldn't keep a kid around that was making, you know, whatever amount of money it was. They couldn't just have, you know, a guy making $750,000 just hanging out, just learning on the fly when, you know, they've been sending guys up and down to Rochester just to make sure that they can, you know, get under the cap daily. So, you know, it's a tough bind to be in. I mean, these are some of the problems you have to deal with. It's just amazing that we're already at this point with the Sabres.
Now, a player that I thought a couple years ago, you know, looked really good and had a really good season was Zemgus Girgensson. I think he had 15 goals. And ever since Dan Bylsma has become coach, his role in the team has steadily decreased. You know, they moved him to the wing. They've moved him to different lines. This year, 23 games, one goal. I mean, do you think it's in the cards that he's probably not going to be a Saber fairly soon? Because it just doesn't seem that he fits with Dan Bylsma.
I think if you're talking to anybody on the Sabres who needs to be traded from the team as in a change of scenery kind of deal, I think you have four circles around his name to try to get him going, to get, you know, if you want to help his career out, and maybe somebody else has an interest in him. you know, that's the exact guy that you're moving out of there. I mean, there's certain other guys that you could trade at, you know, maybe deadline day deal type guys. But I think Zemgus is a guy where ever since he's been getting coached by Dan Bylsma, it's just, he's lost. Like, I don't know if this is the difference between Ted Nolan's not system and Dan Bylsma's very, you know, very structured system where he can't adhere or that he can't stick with what is being asked of him to do, or if he's not in the right place at all, because they're trying everything under the sun, you know, playing him at center, playing him on the wing, playing him with, you know, whoever, just to try to get him going, and nothing's coming through. And it's hard. It's very hard because, I mean, he's a young kid. He's a physical player. The guy where you're mm-hmm. thinking, like, well, geez, you know, what's wrong? You know, why can't we get this guy going? But I think playing for Ted, he was, you know, he had a comfort level there, obviously, from, you know, playing for Ted in Latvia, but also because Ted just kind of let these guys kind of freewheel and do things however they needed to. And I think that's where Zemgus really was able to break out, because he was just, you know, drive the net, you know, shoot the puck all you want because you're, you know, one of the best guys out there just by default. But it's been very tough to watch him. And I think it's going to get to a point here where, you know, he's making, you know, $2 million, 2.1, and it's like, what are we getting out of this guy even for $2.1 million? It's not a whole lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure even Sam Reinhart is happy that Jack Eichel's back too, because his production fell off a little bit, but I'm sure there's not that much worry about him, right?
No, you know, I think with him, it's, yeah, obviously it's a comfort level with Jack, but, you know, he was doing a lot of really good things, you know, because he's such a smart player. And, you know, just a lot of the times the pucks aren't going to that. I mean, he's playing with Kane, and, you know, if Kane goes, you know, snake bitten for a while, you know, Sam's numbers are going to take a hit too. And I think that was definitely the case with those guys. And, you know, also, you know, they didn't really have a guy to play center. I mean, Sam was playing center occasionally there, and it seems pretty clear now that Sam's a right wing. You know, he's not going to really be a center at all now. Yeah. But, you know, it's no coincidence, though, that, you know, the last two games he's got 4 points, and look who's back playing with them again. And, you know, suddenly Sam's got a ton of points, Jack's got points, you know, and Evander's playing reasonably well now. So it's one of those things where, you know, some of these things just aren't a coincidence.
No, no doubt. Well, Joe, listen, we appreciate you taking the time out and coming on, and I'll be trotting through the area in a few weeks. Maybe I'll see you in Toronto, and we'll keep an eye on the Sabres. They're an interesting story.
Yeah, you're probably going to get sick of me. I think you're going to see me at the if you're at the Team USA camp in a couple weeks here, I'll see you there. And then there's a very good chance I'll be in Toronto for the early part of the tournament. So yeah, you'll get sick of me.
All right. Well, that sounds good. All right, Joe, we'll catch you next time. Thanks, man.
You got it, Russ. See you, Mike.
Thanks, Joe.
All right. So we invite Anthony back in, and we'll
Must we?
Oh, wow.
Michael.
Just kidding.
Michael.
Anthony, I'm sorry.
Cole.
That's all right. He's getting.
I had to do my best. I had to do my best Italian mother voice there, so, you know.
Yes, that was good, actually.
not like I've heard that enough times.
So. And what did you think of the, you know, Carter Hart extending this streak? And, you know, there was an interesting talk that we had on the Hockey Buzzcast, and I want to get your opinion. That is, maybe Eck thought maybe the Flyers might have interest in Ben Bishop. And I said, you know, the one thing the Flyers always seem to do is sort of screw up when they have, like, a top-flight goalie on the way, but he's not quite there yet. And then they get a veteran that overlaps too long with the top-flight guy, and then that guy gets put on ice. And I think that's what would happen if Bishop went there, because I think Hart's only 2 years away.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a good move for Philadelphia. I mean, yes, potentially in the short term you might get a little bit of a pop, but overall, when you've got this, you know, you've got options in the system here, and as you said, Hart.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, again, does Silvertips play a system that's conducive to help Hart a bit? Yeah, that's it. I mean, you can make an argument for that. But that said, the kid's talent level is tremendous. I mean, if anybody who watches him play, knows that this kid's going to likely be an NHL goalie and a pretty good one at the rate he's going.
I mean, Canada wants him. That's pretty good.
Canada wants him. I mean, he almost, you know, with his number certainly this season, he's, you know, back-to-back WHL players of the week, CHL goalie of the week, CHL goalie of the week.
Yep.
Just tremendous anticipation angles. We were impressed with him just from when we spoke with him during developmental camp.
Oh yeah.
He's just so mature beyond his years in terms of, we talked a lot about, you know, Ivan Provorov being mature beyond his years. It's the same in my mind. In many ways, it's the same way with Carter Hart. He just has a really good head on his shoulders in addition to the assets that he has. And again, Philadelphia already has had this past experience of buying in on a veteran goaltender,
yes,
you know, with Ilya Bryzgalov. And in my mind, it's just, if you put your hand up to the stove once already, why would you want to do it again? Now, again, Bishop's not the same kind of player, but I do have to kind of wonder a little bit whether or not we are sort of at the apex of what we can expect from Ben Bishop. And whether or not, mm-hmm, if you're going to bring him on board, whether or not you're going to be getting him as he begins a little bit of a slide, and then was the investment going to be worth that because you're going to be log jamming things? You also have Alex Lyon in the system as well, who's playing,
yep,
particularly well for in his first year with Lehigh Valley as Anthony Stolarz came up. That was you don't want to say the injury to Michael Neuwirth had some fringe benefits for Philadelphia, but it did because Stolarz got some experience. And Lyon finally got a really good bite, and he's played particularly well. And again, deeper in the system, you've got Felix Sandstrom. But again, Hart is the guy who really everybody
Sandstrom,
is,
who also was invited to Team Sweden for,
yeah,
the World Juniors.
Exactly. So when you've got this much depth in the system and this many options, why would you want to log jam things within the system, unless you're really, really, really trying to fast track yourself into cup contention here? And I just don't see the structure in place here for Philadelphia where Ben Bishop would be the guy to get them over the top in that respect. So,
well,
from this standpoint here,
yeah,
in Philadelphia, where they're at as a team, to where they would be at. If he was that last chip to get them over the top, I would say, yeah, then you go and make that thing. But they're just not at that point of their evolutionary cycle yet.
To me, Anthony, it all depends on how long, if Bishop is the guy that they're targeting, how long of a contract they would have to give him. Bishop's already 30
yeah.
years old. I mean, they might be able to get away with a four year or 5 year contract at the most. And you know, with Hart probably having to play another year in junior, another year in the AHL before he's ready to get to the NHL, you're talking year three of a potential Bishop contract. So, I mean, I think it's preferable to have a little overlap and to have some depth in your organization as the Flyers do in net, as compared to the Maple Leafs right now, where all the weight's on Frederik Andersen. You know, Jonas Enroth hasn't won a game yet. Their AHL goaltender, one guy can't control himself on social media. The other guy can't stop a puck the last month. Their number two goalie in the AHL is a 30-year-old KHL veteran, and their future goaltender is a freshman at Boston College. So I would rather take the Flyers situation than the Maple Leafs situation right now.
Okay, that's fair. So next question will be roundtable-ish. We'll start this one off with Anthony because Mike and I talked about it earlier in the week, but now it's definite. You know, Donald Fehr has turned down the NHL's, we'll say, deal, and we'll put it in quotes, for the Olympics.
Yeah.
It really was. It was like you signed this deal and you got the Olympics.
I needed a shower after that proposal. I'm sorry. I just think that proposal was ridiculous. The league knew exactly what the NHLPA
yeah.
was going to say to that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a sell down there. Over. Yeah, we'll give you a 3-year extension if you for in exchange for the Olympics. It's like, guys, you know, this is the exact type of offer that if you want to sow distrust in the Players Association to your intentions, that's the exact kind of thing. These are the kind of offers in my mind that creates that level of angst between the two sides.
Mm-hmm.
And negotiation. This is the real world, and that's the way it is. We're talking, obviously, millionaire athletes and billionaire owners, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But that offer, when I saw that, and it was actually, I was like, are they being serious with this kind of offer? And then when it was when the report that this was offered, I was just like, you know, head desk. I'm like, Gary, you know, what are you doing? This, you know, I know you want to play hardball, but for God's sakes, is this, you know, necessary to make it this kind of an offer? It's just like they knew that, you know, they knew what the response was going to be from the Players Association. So what the end game is going to be, you know, it's like Groundhog Day. We're going to be back in a lockout the way things are going. So that's my view on it.
Okay. Mike?
To me, the NHL got exactly what they wanted. They didn't want the responsibility for turning down the Olympics, so they basically made the players do it. They served this up. Now, we knew that the players weren't going to take a 3-year extension
right.
on the CBA. It was a fait accompli that they weren't going to do that. All the owners wanted was them to not be responsible for not going. So they offered this up. The players are the bad guys. Oh, no, we don't want to go to the Olympics bad enough to extend the CBA. Okay, well, we're not going then, so good. And that's really what they wanted. So I never thought that the NHL wanted to go to South Korea. They probably want to go to China in 2022. They're going to get their way. And
they might get their way. We have to see what diplomatic relations will be between the U.S. and China at that point.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, hey, you know, if we're making phone calls to Taiwan, we might be in deep trouble.
Call it for what it is, Ross. Are we all going to be here in 2022? That's the elephant in the room.
It really is. I mean,
is that glow at sunrise? Is that the sun, or is that nuclear bombs going off?
Oh man.
Oh boy.
Thank
That's
you.
Really true.
We don't mean to get political, but we couldn't help ourselves here.
It was there. It was right there. I mean, there was nothing I could do about it. But yeah, Mike, you make a good point, and we'll see what happens with that. Now, another story broke today that it was interesting because I was at the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame induction 2 days ago, and Friday. No, today's Saturday. You say yesterday. No, Thursday. Who knows? One of these days. It was Thursday. And there was I was discussing with Adam Woden, you know Adam, and I was discussing the Islanders with them and how they probably are in a search for somebody in that organization to sort of take hold of things and, you know, guide them through the desert. And now there's a story from Arthur Staple in Newsday that's exactly what the new owners are doing. So, Anthony, I ask you, who is the guy they're looking at? They interviewed a few guys already, but I don't think it was anybody that you would get that you would say is a stone cold lock. I will tell you that the article said they spoke to Pat LaFontaine and Brad Richards.
Mm-hmm.
The Brad Richards one makes me smile a little bit, not because it's good, but because he lives in the Hamptons. So he doesn't have to travel far if he wants to do it. LaFontaine makes sense because he was with the, you know, with the organization. I figured they might even reach out
you've
to Bossy or Trottier, but, you know, what do you think?
You've got the built-in thing there. But, again, the only thing is with LaFontaine is how quickly he – you know, he retreated last time
He
was in the, you know, in sort of a position like this. So I'm going to need to probably see a little bit more, if it is him, a bit more buy-in this time around and not as quick to pull the cord. Although, again,
and do you think that
I
could go for a GM
why,
too?
Well, we all understood why. We all understood why, but it was still, it didn't make it, it didn't make it any better in that circumstance. So I'm kind of curious. The Richards thing,
I'm with you on that.
And my obvious question to you is, when you began having a conversation about the Islanders with Adam Woden, was it about under 30 seconds where you heard the sound from him?
It came pretty early. I'm just going to let people know we're about 90 seconds out. We'll probably go 5 minutes in overtime. So, it was one of those things, yes. And now, of course, we're going to start hearing rumors of Dale Tallon and other, you know, notable GMs like that, and just in case they do get a president that wanted to make a change. And so, you know, Ant, do you have a name for GM? Do you think it would be Tallon? Or do you think they would go somewhere else?
I think probably, in all likelihood, I think they would. Yeah. That's a tough call, Russ. It's a tough call. I think the odds would probably go they might lean somewhere else, but I don't know. That's a tough one. I just don't have a heads or tails on that one. That's difficult.
Nope, that's fair. Mike, what do you think?
Whenever there's a general manager position open, the first name I think of is Paul Fenton. But I think he's the heir apparent in Nashville, and he's just waiting for David Poile to retire. By the way, with LaFontaine, you know, with the situation with the Islanders, there's not going to be the old Pegula switcheroo like there was in Buffalo, because he really got undercut. It was like he was brought in as the president, I believe he was given the title of general manager, and then found out that he had no power, and that's why he extricated from Buffalo right away. I mean, I'm sure he's going to get chapter and verse. If he's part of this, you know. Yeah, and it was ridiculous, and you know, that wasn't Tim Murray's fault. That was the ownership's fault, and you know, the Pegulas, and the one thing that they've done well is keep the teams in Buffalo. Other than that, not much. There has to be a complete changeover with the Islanders organization from head to toe, general manager, coach. Wipe it clean, start over, and there are plenty of capable general managers out there. I would like to see Dale Talon, because I think he's been moved out by the analytics crowd in Florida, and if he gets hired there, then probably you'll see Gerard Gallant as the coach.
Yeah, you might. I mean, you know, maybe Dale Talon gets hired. Maybe they bring in someone like Rick Dudley. The thing is, and I say Dudley because of the talent evaluation, because they're going to have to get up to speed quickly in order to have a good draft, too. Because if you make that kind of change, let's say you're making it when the season ends, you don't have a lot of time. You don't have a lot of time to mobilize for the draft, and you don't know if the new regime is going to trust the old regime in the draft. We saw what happened with Florida last year, right, Ant? I mean, that was a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you have things like that in flux, it's just, it makes things real tough to sort of get an idea of how, you know, because if you have the structure in place, you have the plan in place, and you're ready to go. But if you're in flux, I mean, the problem is you make your picks, and then the new management comes in, and it's like, not necessarily sure these are the guys we're going to be able to get a pick. So it's like, you like to have your ducks in a row in those circumstances.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I don't know how that's going to sort of shake out, but it'll be interesting to watch, because it's going to happen sooner than later, that's for sure. Last thought, let's see. I just thought I saw some breaking news, but it wasn't anything worthwhile. Last thought, and we're hearing rumblings about Quebec. When do you think Quebec will, you know, be announced, and when do you think they'll come in the league, and how do you think they'll come in the league? This is the last question tonight for all of us.
In terms of, I think the league, what I'm sure the league would prefer, would have to think if they're going to bring in Quebec, they would like the expansion set up in this circumstance. But I don't know. I always sometimes you have to wonder whether or not the sort of the league sort of keeps Quebec, much like, you know, in the same, if they were going to go into Canada with a new market, it would be almost a similar scenario to, you know, obviously with Atlanta moving to Winnipeg in this circumstance, or one of the other struggling franchises. But again, I don't think they want to have another example of another south of the Mason-Dixon line club having to move, because, again, it's an admittance for the NHL that another market down there didn't work. And that's – so
but
I think
it could be Carolina. They literally could move overnight.
It could be. And if it's Carolina, that could be really good news for Quebec, because Carolina's really got – you know, I think they're going to be a team on the come here in the next few years. But point, I think at the same time, though, I think they would probably prefer to have the expansion dollars coming in that circumstance, but I could be wrong.
Mike?
I think there's going to be an expansion team within, I'd say, 2 to 3 years. I still think that, you know, that Quebec is going to end up being a transfer. I mean, Carolina, as you said, Russ, I mean, you know, the Carmano situation, it sounds like he's either going to sell pretty soon, or, you know, there have been rumblings in the last few days that there's going to be some transfer of ownership, and if that happens, and that puts them to the front of the line to me. I know that the league wants to keep footprint in the Southeast, but if it's just not working, it's just not working. I think the expansion,
they can't really control
Seattle.
It anymore. Like, yeah, not to interrupt, and I'll let you get it back in. What I'm noticing is when I saw Carmanos, and I brought this up a few weeks ago when he was shifting his home office and doing some business work. I knew something was up. And there's not much the NHL can do anymore, Mike, when he is just at a point where he is ready to sell. And if he, you know, whether he's transferring ownership or he actually decides, hey, you know what, I'm going to sell to somebody that's going to move the team. Like, that's just the way it is. I have to get out from under. I mean, they can't really do anything about that. Unless
they found a way to squelch Jim Balsillie when he wanted to buy, I think it was Pittsburgh, and then there was Nashville. I mean, there were instances where he was, you know, he was planning on moving the team, and they had no interest in him moving the team. So I think they have a little more control than that. But I, you know, if he sells it to somebody who's amenable to trading to moving it to Quebec, then, you know, maybe the league will be good with that. I think that, you know, like I said, Quebec will be a transfer. The expansion will be probably Seattle, and if that happens, then you have 16 in the West, 16 in the East, and everything is beautiful. And that's, you know, I think that's the way they want it to end up, and that's probably the way it will end up.
Seems likely. I mean, it just does. I mean, look, like I was saying, the league could always buy the team if they want. They could have, you know, they could buy it at market value from Karmanos, and then he can get out, and then. But I don't think they want to do that anymore. I just don't. They've done that
before.
Yeah,
it really worked
a
lot with Arizona.
Yeah.
It worked well with Arizona, didn't it?
Yeah, so I don't think they're going to go there. But anyhow, we'll end it there, and that's going to be it for this week's Off the Post, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.